Good evening, Bitcoiners.
Welcome back to Bitcoin Center, live stream number 24. My name is Cedric Youngelman.
I'm Paul Tarantino.
And here we go. So it's another Tuesday. Anything in the news? I got something I would bring up.
All right, go ahead.
That I don't think is in the show. I don't know. But the $16 billion confiscation.
Oh, yeah. I just heard about that today.
Yeah.
Farming scam.
Yeah, that's the pig farming scam.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think that accurately describes it. I think it was a lot of sort of online scams to kind of heist people from their money and lure them in. Did you hear all the details?
No.
They had, I think, a camp set up in Cambodia. Like people were prisoners there. And they had to work on, they were lured in and they had to work on these, these jobs to kind of scam people online.
Okay.
And this was supposedly a 38-year-old who was running all of this and then laundering some of the money through legal fronts, like casinos and different things in industry, and kind of build a front. I mean, and then somehow managed to accrue, I guess, 130,000 plus Bitcoin.
This is crazy. So these kind of scams have been going on forever. You don't ever hear about, I would never hear about bust. Like the only bust I would see is some guy on YouTube blowing up a scammer on YouTube. But is Bitcoin finally the incentive to get law enforcement? The government wanting Bitcoin, is that finally the incentive to go out and blow up these scams? Because scammers are out of control.
What if this is just repatriating? What if this was one organization to another?
This is black. It's not tin.
That a 38-year-old person was running multiple businesses in multiple industries, through different sort of trade skills, harboring people, trafficking, money laundering, and then somehow
he wasn't that old.
I mean, he was very young.
Yeah.
Then when he gets caught,
and it wasn't he didn't look like a big violent guy.
Yeah, and he wasn't just stealing crypto and cashing it all out. He was harboring the stolen funds in Bitcoin.
Mm-hmm.
And then the authorities show up and he's like, oh yeah, you're right. Here's my keys. Because they found him and they're working on it.
Are these agents for the U.S. to get
profits? We need to bring that home.
This is how they get revenue neutral Bitcoin?
I have no idea. I'm just being a tinfoil hat here. But it just seems so a little
weird.
Right. But I do want to read a tweet. So I'll bring this up to my bookmarks here. All right. This is from Lola. The U.S. government wanting to forfeit. So remember, they're confiscating 127,000 Bitcoin. Yeah. Is exactly the kind of situation that should clarify to everyone what perverse incentives the Strategic Bitcoin Reserve is birthing in the U.S.
Wait, what?
Well, they're confiscating.
Yeah.
Right. So, I mean, it's like their incentive now is to steal
Bitcoin
or take Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Right. Not earn it. Right. Not even print for it.
Right. That's not like they went and busted the scam to return the dollars to the people who got scammed.
Well, it sounds like we're keeping the Bitcoin.
Right. That's the point.
They're not using it to return the money to the people who got scammed.
That's what I was trying to say. Is Bitcoin now the incentive to bust scams? Like the ability of...
Yeah, I think it is. You know what I mean? This is one of the perverse incentives.
Because the scams have been there forever. We never went to go bust scams to get the dollars to the treasury. what I mean?
Right. Well... I mean, they do. There is a lot of asset forfeiture in the United States of America.
That's true.
And they can take it at very little. There's not even proof.
Right.
We pulled you over for a speeding ticket and we smell drugs. We're taking everything until you prove that.
Right.
And you can go through that process and you're still going to be out all the legal fees.
Right.
And you'll probably get half back if you some sort of discount or haircut.
How amazing would it be if law enforcement actually returned the assets to the people that were scammed out of the assets?
That would be great.
That would be amazing, right?
Right.
Especially if this guy was stealing.
But that's not how this process works.
This guy was stealing dollars and investing.
He wasn't even stealing American citizens' money.
Even more.
Yeah, this is a lot of UK,
more global
scam. A lot of Southeast Asia, the global scam. And the NYSE scoops that up. It just seems like they white knight has just showed up and they're like, oh, yeah, wow, here's 130,000 Bitcoin, 40% increase on the SPR.
Right.
I mean, that is dramatic.
That's crazy.
You know, and that's another 16 billion raising the total SPR to like 50 billion, I think, already, something like that.
Wow.
Right.
I wonder, that's really. And we'll see how many of these go on.
They want to keep it. That's opportunistic. What I'm hearing. Sure, they want to keep it. Yep. And largest asset forfeiture in history. Who can advocate for the funds to be returned? I'm sad, and I know these eight people in Cambodia who lost their ETH.
I don't know.
It's so wild. It's a mess. And
They find out where this guy was and what he was doing?
Well, that's where he just turned over his keys.
Yeah.
He took all these steps to build internment.
And then just disappears after this, and there's no like persecution of this guy, be interesting.
Okay. Or even if there's persecution of him, I don't know. See you in Valhalla, 38-year-old buddy. All right. Well, a couple more. Comes up. I'm not sure, but Roger Ver.
Oh, I'd have no idea. What happened to Roger Ver?
He settled.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, he settled. I believe he settled. Did he settle
Bitcoin?
He settled.
Into the reserve?
He paid some amount of money. I think probably 40-something million or something. I can't quote him on that. But he settled and he gets his freedom back, I guess. That's good. That's great. It makes you wonder. It's like,
was that a shakedown?
Whatever. I don't know, but it's really interesting. I want to read the book Hijacking Bitcoin. I'll admit that. I want to read the book. Mm-hmm. I want to see the other side. I'm not saying I have to believe everything that's in the book. Roger is really interesting. I mean, he's Bitcoin Jesus, so the OG.
I mean, Roger was
the way he spoke Roger about
was
it
was amazing until the whole block wars.
He supported the whole nascent industry in a lot of ways. In the beginning,
100%.
One of the first angel investors in Bitcoin.
The way he talked about Bitcoin very much affected me emotionally, and it was. But that's what Bitcoin does, right?
Maybe Roger went off the reservation, but is he wrong about everything? Probably not.
Probably not.
And I'd like to hear his side on the big block thing. And
I have to agree. We still have the big block debate.
But if he settles for 40 million, for 40 million, like what did he, like what if, the, could you imagine if they came to him like 6 months ago, like 20 million? He's like, no. 6 months later, like, 40 million. It's probably not in reverse. It's not like it's coming down. I have no idea. Maybe there was never a deal. Like what did he gain for the time he spent if that deal was always on the table? And think like no amount of money is worth your freedom. The keys.
Yeah.
What are you going to change? I hope for an administration change. Like Ross, in a way, it was strange that it'd be Trump then. Biden back to Trump to get out, like it was going to happen on Biden's turn, and literally was waiting for that one card. A president could get Ross out.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I thought that was really interesting. I don't know if it's in the show, but the Trump is supposedly got $870 billion
exposure
to Bitcoin. What do you make of that?
Oh, he's doing a lot better than
most
people. that was a rapid increase.
Yeah, one day he's going to show up at the, Fort Bitcoin, Fort Satoshi Nakamoto and just say, oh, here's the keys. Here's 50, whatever. But here's 500,000 Bitcoin he could walk away with. But still, he's got almost a billion.
Yeah.
I assume is that a conflict of interest?
Is that World Liberty Financial? His whole family?
The way they wrote it sounded like him.
Interesting.
Is that his, piece of World Liberty,
gotcha.
I don't know.
Yeah, right.
But
who knows? They could also be, the media loves to define all digital assets as Bitcoin. So that could be like their total crypto holdings.
Yeah, that could be their total crypto holdings. Yeah. Well, whatever it is, then, they're obviously, that could be stable coins. Sure.
Yeah.
But they're aligned with sort of the outcome here.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
whatever incentives that breeds, you know,
might be more than we can say for Core.
Well, I hope that comes up. Wow, this is was it day two or three? I heard like four people are running Core 30. I don't know. I think it's like nine people now. I mean, it's very low.
I heard high numbers. I heard low numbers. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
The numbers I did see quoted, I saw a chart. It looked like it was very low numbers. Yeah, I don't know. I already see different organizations sort of touting layer one use cases with this that they didn't have before.
Yes.
AVMs and EVMs.
Exactly. It's like, okay. So it's like literally
and
right
and
after.
There's already people talking about
right
Soul
after
Forks.
It launches, people are already saying like, "Oh, great, we can do this now. We can do this now."
Yeah.
Where the whole time
they were quiet. They're like, "Nah, we cool, bro."
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden they're like, "Oh, this is awesome, Core V30. Yeah, right? I have nothing to do with monetary transactions. We're pumped."
Yeah. All the shit we were worried about.
Stupid. I don't know, like what was the rush? But I don't. I went. I heard Adam back.
Yeah.
He tweets a lot about this topic.
A lot. He tweets a lot.
I'm wondering, but I want to look at the math. Like, I was trying to, like, I want to figure out how many tweets, how often, and run a business
and be everywhere.
Why would it matter so much? And the argument still seems to be don't worry, it's a nothing burger.
Yeah, that's not true.
And I just, you know.
I don't know, man.
Yeah, it could be tough. I'm trying to get into the weeds, but that's where it gets a little tricky, though. Trying to really figure it out for yourself, you know. I still lean. This is not good, and there was no rush.
I totally agree that this is not good because they're not fixing a problem. Tell me what the problem was that caused you to have to increase the amount of data that you could put in op return. What was the problem? Why did that need fixing? Nothing needed fixing. So then what's the purpose? Well, there was no they didn't give us a purpose. It was just the purpose was because why not?
Did you see Pierre Richard on he was on another show. Great show.
I mean when I talked to Pierre, he was pro.
But he said worst case scenario. He's like, this is really bad.
Okay, I haven't heard this.
He's like, you know, it's an attack and Bitcoin needs to be attacked and Bitcoin goes to $1,000 and we have to hard fork and we figure out how to clean up the whole chain and we apologize to Luke and it goes on. And it was a little like, whoa, like, I don't know. Like,
yeah,
I get the thought experiment and like, we can always figure this out, but
what's
that seems like a lot of unintended
going down to 200 million. It'll all be a big deal, bro. We'll just reorg, man. It's no big deal, bro.
Right. And
I
don't know. So, all right. Well, we got a lot to get into.
It just doesn't feel right.
You know, live stream number 24. We could go, let's just get into it.
There's
a lot of topics. So this is brought to you by Byte Federal. Go bank yourself. Can't wait to get into it, guys.
Let's be real, right? Praising Telegram for launching a Bitcoin wallet. I've always felt like Vitalik.
Bitcoin, this digital currency that's out there, that people say, oh, it might be the next big thing. What do you think?
I think it's rat poison.
Bitcoin. You never heard them a few weeks ago. Now everybody's talking about them. But is it a currency?
I don't know. Or is it more like a stock? Or is it a tulip bulb?
Or is
whatever
it just
debate that.
Stupid.
To me, it smells like Ponzi scheme and the greater fool theory, right?
You do like 5 minutes of freaking research.
Well, good. Thanks for coming to my set talk.
Yes.
Don't buy Bitcoin.
Oh, man, I get that wrong. All right. Bitcoin's recent rally.
Do you agree? Is crypto finally dead? Go to the next one.
Matter of fact, they're kind of in the Ethernet. What are they?
There's some rumors that it's this Japanese guy, but they're saying, no, that he's a fake name. It was a pseudonym.
I mean, you're literally putting real money onto a system that we don't even know who created it.
It will come to a bad ending.
Is this the most exciting bull run ever?
Not for me. No, it's not.
Welcome to Bitcoin Center, the fast-paced show where the debate is about this story.
All right, Question number one, the historic Bitcoin flash crash. After Bitcoin plunged by $20,000 in an hour during Friday's record $20 billion liquidation event, was this a healthy leverage flush out or a warning sign for deeper liquidity?
Boom. I mean, that was something, huh? I missed it, I feel like.
I missed it, too. I literally worked all day, and then kind of people told me what was going on. And, yeah, I was clueless about it.
Yeah, I missed it. You know, I saw, like, by the time I tuned in, it was down like half of what it was. And it reminded me a lot of March of 2020.
Mm-hmm.
And I was, I went instantly looking for the news. I saw the Trump thing that he threatened 100% tariffs on China. And I was like, oh, like, at this almost, then I was like, oh, this feels like 4 months ago. And yeah. I said right away, I was like, a couple of days, by Monday, this is going to be all sorted out. And then by Sunday morning, it was like really like almost like, oopsies. I read the memo wrong. AI told me, you know, he was going to eliminate any export of capital, but now it just looks like they're going to monitor it a little bit more closely.
Yeah.
And I read a word wrong, and it's all good.
At the end of the day, I think this is probably pretty good for Bitcoin.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's kind of normal for, you know, up 80% for the year and kind of a bull cycle.
Yeah.
Even though hasn't been a blow off top yet.
Right.
And might not come.
Now, if we had a 20% down bar at the end of a hype, like at the end of a, you know, so an exponential run, then I would be a little bit concerned, but not during this consolidation and on news.
This wiped out like $65 billion in open interest, resetting positioning to July levels, and exposing like thin books, especially these, like there was like a crypto nuclear like mm-hmm. explosion. And coins went from like 350 to a shit penny. Coins
got smoked.
So that's where it this crossing with the Trump thing is weird, because you read it from the crypto world, and this was a little bit like they're trying to say it's not to do with stable coins and things like that, but there were liquidity issues on these centralized exchanges, and there was discrepencies between mm-hmm. ETH USD of like 300% between different exchanges.
You know why? Because the market in these shitcoins is just market makers. It's right. market makers right. making
right. And so they were rebalancing their books and liquidating profitable positions.
Yeah.
And when they say 20 billion loss, that's not 20 billion of put in capital though.
Yeah.
That's, you know, right. you make a $200 bet and now it's worth two, you lever up 20x. Yeah.
Right.
And you lose that. You don't lose your capital, right. You know, all 20 billion. That's, you lose a portion of that in capital terms. But this was crazy. So like some of these stable coins like depegged by like 35%. And we'll get into it a little bit more. But you know, kind of exposed some fragility in the broader,
I think it's healthy
bullshit crypto system.
It needs it to is happen,
healthy,
man.
Right? It's definitely healthy. And as Bitcoiners, you're like, I've been here before. And yeah. It was like, I barely blinked.
Right.
And, you know,
when people were told me like, hey, the markets are melting down. And I went and I pulled them. I looked at Bitcoin and I'm like, oh.
Now, Bitcoin even had some thinner exchanges, I think, that did get down to like 103.
Yeah.
And but again, none of these things broke 100K. And it doesn't mean it won't break 100K whenever. But very interesting. Yeah, I think it's very good.
Moving on.
All right. So trade war between U.S. and China looms. Do the newly announced tariffs signal a short-term negotiation tactic, or is the White House prepared for a sustained economic confrontation with Beijing?
I mean, I think Trump is prepared, but I don't think our economy is prepared for a trade war.
He might flip-flop again.
Yeah. I would suspect that somebody's going to get in his ear and be like, yo, this ain't going to work because, you know, we can't build anything without China. So I don't know, you know, if there's like a willingness to really go all in. And I think probably China understands that, like negotiate all you want, talk tough all you want. I mean, how much pressure can we put on them? Other than
this is a full blown currency
soybeans
war
and hogs. I mean, right.
Like, I don't think it's a trade war. I think it's a currency war.
Oh, well, of course, it's a currency war.
I think they both actually need the currency war to do the things they need to do at home. To keep their population from each population from revolting within.
Sure.
So they need the appearance of, like, I wouldn't be like, there's an under the table handshake. Like, I think it's all choreographed. I think they call up and say, hey, we're going to announce the 100% tariffs. You're going to act surprised. Like, we need to kind of do something over here.
Yeah, that might be the case. It might be the case.
Coordinated.
It could be.
I think that's all felt out. I think.
But there's no denying, right, that we need rare earths and we need chips.
Oh, no denying that.
To upgrade our energy grid.
Well, that's why we bought the pesos.
We need all the
transport. That's why we bought $20 billion in pesos the other day. Because it's not about it. That's adding liquidity to the fiat market in global, that's adding global liquidity.
We bought
pesos. And we're buying access to minerals and rare earths.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
And then use that money in certain ways, and here's money, and you don't go kaboom pop right now.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
100%. And it brings them under our wing. And all right.
Yep.
Next
all
one.
Right. Next question. All right. So institutions plan to double crypto exposure by 2028. The question is, if institutions truly plan to double their Bitcoin exposure, why announce it now, signaling strategy to competitors instead of quietly accumulating?
Because this, I think, is ideological narrative framing. So this is more about crypto and stable coins, mm-hmm. and they want to push people towards these things now.
Yes.
They are rolling these things out, and this is not about Bitcoin. This is not about, we're worried. This is like, we want people to know we're good. They should use our products. Let's prime them.
Yeah. The bond market's going to die. Let's start selling them this stuff instead.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
That's the bottom line.
And I think it just represents like moving sort of assets from your dollars that are not tokenized to now the tokenized dollar at the same bank or a different bank.
Yeah.
So I think that's just priming.
Priming the pump.
Yeah. So I think it's kind of nothing burger. All right, let's go to the next one.
My essay comes out tomorrow, and my take on the four-year cycle, the TLDR is like, there have been 3-4 year cycles, and there's very good reasons for them, all centered around U.S. and Chinese monetary policy. I know that there is a technical factor in terms of mining rewards, but I think that is not really the real driver of all this. It just happens to happen at the same time. It's really about fiat liquidity between the U.S. and China. And if we think about like this particular cycle, if you just listen to what the politicians are telling us, and they usually, as you know, up in liars as they all are, they usually tell the truth about some things. And the consistent message, whether you know, we're all around the world, is we will do all these things for people, and we're not going to tax them for them. Whether that's building bombs, it's building factories, it's building houses, whatever it is, taxes are not going up to the level needed to pay for all this stuff. So it's just all about printed money. And whether it's the Fed or it's the PBOC, it's, you know, ECB, whatever central bank you want to talk about, the politicians are saying, hey, we need cheaper money and we need more of it. And there's various ways of getting to that point, which is why I think Bitcoin and gold, for that matter, are basically telling us the future is more fiat debasement. And so I don't think the four-year cycle applies in this particular instance, mainly because nobody knows what the world order is going to look like in the next 2 to 3 years, but surely will be volatile, and surely politicians will print money to make sure that people feel okay and vote for them or support them in the political process. So I'm long and strong.
All right. I think Arthur Hayes usually has like dope takes that are just hot takes of fire. I think he makes a lot of predictions. I don't think he's known as a great trader. I haven't heard all his predictions come true. I've seen some of them fall flat, but what do you think? Is the four-year cycle dead? Is this all driven by global liquidity? I feel like we've talked about this for a bit, but you've been talking about global liquidity probably for longer than I have.
No, I think Arthur's totally right. And I would kind of support what he's saying by some of the research I've seen Michael Howell disclose and talk about, and also Raoul Paul, in that they're looking at this global liquidity cycle that was synced with Bitcoin for throughout these last three cycles, but then broke during COVID, meaning that in the COVID crash, in that era where rates went to zero and stayed low for some time, many of the world's treasury holders and debt holders refinanced, right? So everybody got in on these lower rates and restructured their debt. And so we're coming up into now an extended cycle because of that, where you would have a normal refinancing cycle, which takes low rates, takes liquidity to operate the refinancing cycle. If that gets delayed because everybody was able to refinance in late 2020, and that pushes out this liquidity cycle, then it could naturally be that we get this liquidity cycle to last longer, and we see rates come down into end of this year, early next year, providing more liquidity, because we're going to run into this wall of refinancing that has to happen, you know, right around the second and third quarters of next year. It's a massive wall of refinancing that looks like it needs to be accomplished. So that means more liquidity for Bitcoin, a lot longer than what we've had in past cycles.
So my only thought, though, is I think if liquidity plummets between now and sometime in before the end of Q2,
mm-hmm.
people, there will be half the camp will say that's because the cycle's over. Halvings, you know, mm-hmm. this lines up mm-hmm. enough that they'll attribute it to the halving cycle
mm-hmm.
and not liquidity per se. And that will persist on, because I agree. I think that this lines up much more with liquidity than the halving cycles yeah. over the last 16 years. So we'll see. I think a lot of people are afraid of their friends of being like, ha ha, how did you not see that coming again?
Right.
So,
well, and this might be, I think, a lot of the reasons why you're seeing some of the treasury company get sold so hard, because there's probably right. some people that bought that believing that it was going to be linked to the 4-year cycle.
Right. And that they were going to put it the 4-year cycle on steroids.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. I mean, they are eating up a lot of supply. And every institution is eating a supply, so more than the minted supply.
Operates yeah. right now without banking access, isolated, yet resolute in her fight for change. Some Venezuelans found a lifeline in Bitcoin during hyperinflation, using it to protect their wealth and to finance their escape. Today, Bitcoin bypasses government-imposed exchange rates and thus helps many of our people. It has evolved from a humanitarian tool to a vital means of resistance. We are grateful for the lifeline Bitcoin provides and look forward to embracing it in a new democratic Venezuela. We envision Bitcoin as part of our national reserves, helping rebuild what the dictatorship stole. Before our gold reserves were plundered, Venezuela had wealthy financial reserves worldwide. We will restore those reserves and include Bitcoin as a key component. The only way to help Venezuela's poorest is by ensuring property rights, low inflation, equal access to opportunity.
Well, she sounds like she works at the United States.
Yeah, well, that was so my one question right there. It was my last question, but now that you mentioned it, like, why was that in English?
Cool.
Like, who's she talking to? Is she talking to Bitcoiners or talking to Venezuelans? Because, right? So that was interesting to me. Another politician. I'm just,
I don't. Like, so she won the Nobel Peace Prize.
Okay.
That's interesting.
For me, but
that's fine. An interesting.
Do you know what she got the Peace Prize for?
No.
That okay.
Other than throwing over or taking over as opposition leader in Venezuela against an authoritarian,
sure. But like Milei was an opposition, you know, leader. Yeah. And did you see the concert he put on the other day?
No,
for his book.
I didn't see his concert.
Oh my gosh,
I can't watch him anymore. Dude.
Very Neil Diamond-esque.
Oh,
lots of grunts and groans and like performing, and it was like
I got a huge
stadium. To celebrate the release of his book.
Yeah, he's good at that. He's really good at that.
You know, so yeah, my trust level goes so far.
So anyways, the question becomes like, is Bitcoin's place a global tool for political resistance? Is this what they're trying to say?
Bitcoin's become a global marketing tool.
When I put her there, I put Bukele in El Salvador, I put Milei in Argentina, I say, oh, okay, this we're going to now just try and Bitcoinize and stablecoinize all of Latin America. You're now our best buddies and we're here to help. We're no longer going to extract resources and keep your currency down and support cartels and fly in weapons for overthrowing government. Instead, you're all our friends now, and it's all Bitcoin and stable coins. And I can't help but think, like, why now? Why? Like, I mean,
because I think that our allies need to move to a sort of to our rails. So where the America's looking to capture,
right, exactly,
reserves, hash power. Yeah.
We love you now because you're going to use the dollar.
So if you so and we're going to use Bitcoin to bring back credibility to fiat, because gold is no longer credible. Oil is no longer sort of credible for it.
And it's a kind of an interesting way around. Like, oh, Bitcoin saved all these people's lives. And that's all true, right? Like, any good PSYOP is 95% truth, right? So they're like, they can tell all these great stories about Bitcoin, and we can celebrate Venezuela, which is all good. I'm not like, I don't want to sound like I just, I mean, this is great for the Venezuelan people. But at the same time, you just like, when you understand the political motivation of the United States, you begin to think like, all right, have you heard this guy,
level 941, otherwise goes as Pigeon, a low IQ Pigeon. I love this guy, right?
941, so, is he a Sarasota boy?
Level 941, I don't know. Okay. I don't think so. But I have no reason to, okay. So he says, here's what Trump Empire is doing. China has been working on a 20-year plan since the zeros. America too, it's all coming together. Capture custody, BlackRock, Fidelity, Coinbase custody. Domesticate production, Marathon, Riot, CleanSpark, nuclear feeds. Step three, control liquidity rails, ETFs, banking APIs, Fed supervision. Four, integrate legal dominance, FASB fair value, SEC reporting, CFTC oversight. Five, tie it to defense, Department of Energy, Grid, Department of Defense, Cyber Layer, NSA hash security. Outcome, Bitcoin functions as controlled pressure valve for the $35 trillion in debt that absorbs global demand for hard assets under American jurisdiction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well and said. I think he nailed it.
And he goes on to talk about sort of...
We should give him a seat on the show. He's way better. He's way smarter than I am.
Yeah.
Well done, 941.
Yeah, gold enriches BRICS, fiat inflates the West. Bitcoin restores hard asset credibility without leaving U.S. custody. That's the play. Don't replace the dollar. Reinforce it. Keep fiat for spending. Use Bitcoin as the reserve release valve.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's really,
that's what's going on.
And did you see that Marathon struck a deal with sort of a French nuclear energy company?
No, I didn't see that.
Yeah, to get their excess power, which is sort of like feeding French European power into our power grid.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Marathon's building a facility there, though.
I think they're tapping into an existing facility, probably maybe investing in a future facility. Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
I wonder how many, I wonder if there's any European Union countries that are going to become like the El Salvador to the United States.
Well, I think that's what a lot of,
right? You know what I mean? Like,
well, because we're going to release
the European Union's going to break up. There's no way European Union is staying together.
I don't know. A lot of people say that, you know, it looks like it's under a lot of pressure, but
I mean, I could see France, Italy, others that are not in such great shape saying, you know,
I love this guy.
We should maybe tighten up our relationship with America here.
Same playbook as the oil era. Create the infrastructure first, declare the standard later. Phase one, build domestic hash production. Phase two, custody through ETFs and treasury seizures. Phase three, tokenized T-bills backed by verified energy.
ETF seizures.
Through ETFs and treasury seizures. I don't know if the end applies.
Treasury seizures.
I don't know if ETFs end.
Wait. It's like seizing treasuries from foreign nations.
Or seizing like this kid, this 38-year-old guy has 130,000 Bitcoin. Phase two, custody through ETFs. So having the ETFs custody the Bitcoin and treasury seizures.
Oh, Bitcoin treasury seizures.
To build their treasury. Phase three, tokenized T-bills backed by verified energy.
Yep.
Right. And that could be a public-private partnership, like I've been saying with Goldman. That's the new dollar. The new dollar, the hash dollar. So not the petrodollar anymore. This guy called it the hash dollar.
I like this guy.
Yeah, this guy's really fucking good.
That's awesome.
There's a few more I'm hoping I'll find before we So all right, let's get on to the lightning round.
All right, let's do it.
All right.
Texas. You're up. Texas. Bitcoin Reserve. Will other states do it? I'll do it for you.
No. Okay. All right. I see it. Texas officially launches a Bitcoin treasury. So if Texas just launched a state-run Bitcoin reserve using taxpayer funds, are there more to follow?
Well, there's already New Hampshire, Arizona, now Texas. There's like 21 or 22 others that have started the process or talking about the potential of it. So, you know, I mean, that's half the United States have got something in the works. Doesn't mean they're all going to pass. Florida shot it down, for instance. Mm. But
that's interesting.
Yeah, that was surprising. Yeah. But I think we're going to, yes, there's more to come. And I think, you know, especially as some of these states are successful with the treasuries, just like El Salvador was successful and others, other states are going to be like, yo, we're missing out. We got to get on this program. So it's going to happen.
Yeah.
Slowly but surely.
All right. Yeah. We'll see how that plays out. Let's move on to the next one.
Move. The $1 trillion stablecoin prediction debate. Standard Chartered's bold call that stablecoin issuance will hit $1 trillion is meeting skepticism. Are analysts right that this forecast overlooks regulatory and adoption hurdles, or are banks underestimating the crypto dollar demand?
Oh, I don't think they're naive at all. I think they're probably underestimating the push they're going to... The demand and the push into these products.
I agree.
What this goes on to, the standard charter sort of analysis, is around, first they're saying, okay, look, people want these stable coins. So then they're kind of like, oh, well, maybe then they just want everything in a stable coin form. Like, they want your shitty currency, but in a stable coin. They'll trust that more. So they don't want a self-custody. They want custodial custody. So they say that's an opportunity. But then they're like, well, you know, this is maybe more of like a second Bretton Woods, and like the $1 trillion in stable coins that are coming are going to be the dollar that's going to eat up your currency.
Yeah.
And they're going to get to a safer currency. And they paint that as a negative or a potential sort of like disruptive force. No one sort of braces maybe the positive side for the local country there, where their people will get a better life raft to their current currency. And the current that appreciation or that stabilization of their capital doesn't have to leave the country per se.
Mm-hmm.
It would even help them build at home,
right?
Or stabilize their entrepreneurial activities maybe at home.
Yep, 100%.
So some of that could be a value or net positive.
Yeah, 100%.
The bringing stable.
I mean, it's the first step, right? If you can get out, if you're in a country with a bad currency and you can start to save. If you can spend less than you make because your dollar's not hyperinflating, you're gonna start to save.
But the warning here is the Genius Act and the monetary colonialism that's coming.
Yes,
and
yeah, for sure.
They're kind of trying to look at that, and I think that is sort of not being naive.
No,
and they need to. Yeah.
The other thing that you didn't talk about though that I think is going to drive a ton of stablecoin issuance is that I think all the major U.S. exchanges are going to move to extended hours trading. They're going to start to digitize securities and they're going to bring crypto onto their platforms. And that extended trading hours are going to require, and crypto is going to require, stable coins in order for that trading to settle
behind
instantly, 24/7, 365. So that's when
you
start
monetizing.
This,
it's a very interesting space to watch.
Just take the NASDAQ and the NYSE. And tokenize that stable coins they need to trade against.
Anyone listening knows anything about MakerDAO and the history of MakerDAO, yeah. I do want to understand stable coins. And I think they are net positive for the world in a way. And I'm not saying, and it's not even cryptocurrency, that's just sort of like a tool that people can use. But it doesn't necessarily apply to me. But I can see how businesses and people around the world would want stable coins. So it's going to be a very interesting space to watch. But, you know, what's interesting here in this whole report also, though, is that they recognize that the use case for stable coins is not speculation, that it's necessity.
Oh, that's interesting.
That's very interesting. And maybe even crypto, right? So they're recognizing that people are coming to this thing at a necessity and they're not just speculating and gambling.
Right.
So I thought that was really interesting. All right, let's go to the next one.
All right. So Lummis seeks Bitcoin tax relief. Mm-hmm. Oh, please. Senator Cynthia Lummis, and that's not even because I want to sell, introduced a bill to exempt small personal Bitcoin transactions from capital gain tax. Will this bipartisan push finally remove a friction to Bitcoin's currency or get stuck in D.C.?
I praise her for what she's doing, but I think this thing is going to have a hard time.
Yeah, I think this is the grift. I don't,
this
will not get through. Not even a de minimis amount.
Even the de minimis amount, it just.
It's like, you know that scene in Star Wars where they get under that impossibly low wall, it's closing? Yeah, that is like opening this thing up.
Yeah.
That's like Luke Skywalker's like, yo!
Oh, man, like, it's just so rough right in because there. It's like...
that's treating it like money.
It's literally...
That's saying some portion of your stack, and happens, maybe that's a whole stack for people, because that's still...
I mean, they're saying $600 or $5,000, $300 transactions, $5,000 a year. So it's not a ton of money, but it cracks the door open.
Even if it's $100. Yes. Yeah.
So, yeah, man. And it just then U.S. people will start... you know, accepting Bitcoin payments. And
that is that should be the number one. That would be my single issue.
I love it. I hope this works. I hope she's successful.
Do you think that everybody would bring on sell pressure? So like, let's say someone has a number. Let's say someone has a number, right?
No.
They're like, I have X amount of Bitcoin or X amount of sats.
Yeah, but it's $5,000 per year.
Well, no, let's say there was no cap.
Okay, if there's no capital gains tax. Yeah.
Let's say there's no capital gains.
So what's the question?
Whatever the price is. Yeah, so if people are like, hey, they're thinking to themselves, I want Bitcoin to reach a certain price so that I can sell. But now, without paying taxes, they might say, I could reach a lower price because
people would start to trim off the top as opposed to borrowing against
some sell pressure.
There would be some sell pressure.
Right. So, but I still think it'd be great for the legal framework.
You know, that would hurt the banks, and that would hurt anybody involved in lending against Bitcoin.
All right, let's go on to the next one here. Who's up?
Luxembourg's Bitcoin reserve bet. Luxembourg's sovereign wealth fund invested 1% in Bitcoin ETFs. Symbolic first for the Eurozone, but is this tiny allocation a mere experiment or a bellwether for nations diversifying into Bitcoin reserves?
I think it's both. I think, you know, any smart wealth advisor, we've been talking about this, is like worth their weight in salt or sats, like would give you advice to put in 1%.
Yeah.
And this is about price exposure. I think we covered this last week, but like this is not Bitcoin. They're not buying Bitcoin. They're not self-custodying Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. They don't care about any of that. They're not signaling to the world that you should custody Bitcoin or countries should custody Bitcoin. They're just saying, hey, like we're like a really fucking great hedge fund. And we're going to put 1% in this thing, and it doesn't matter to us if it goes to nothing. And we have the ETF now.
I mean, it's just another, you know.
And it's another plug into America, though.
It's another plug in to the system.
They probably bought IBIT.
Probably.
Right? So it was like, hey, let's support the guy who runs the fucking World Economic Forum now.
I mean,
buy a little bit of his
product. Only good thing here is that it is legitimizing the asset amongst the boomers that have all the wealth, right? When boomers look at this and they go, like, all these countries are doing it. All the broker dealers.
Sure, it is a little bit of signal.
It's a touch of signal about it.
But I don't think. Yeah, I think that's a very small set of people that are really clued into the Ray Dalios, the Harvard news, the Luxembourg news. I still think that's a very small. My TradFi friends and I come from China, like I don't fucking care. Like,
yeah,
it's not Goldman.
Right.
You know.
Yeah. Good point. All right. Next.
All right. So Russia greenlights Bitcoin for banks. As Russia's central bank moves to let commercial banks offer crypto amid 20 million Russians already using it, is this a pragmatic embrace of reality? And do we have any idea how much the Russian government owns?
I don't know how much the Russian government owns, but I think it's more than we know.
Do you think they're mining?
Oh, God. I would assume they're mining.
Do they mine a Bitcoin a day?
Who knows,
right?
They're ever going to tell you?
No, but like we could do some math. That's 365 Bitcoin a year.
I mean there's like, they're not going to be not involved.
Do they have 100,000 Bitcoin that we don't know about?
They could very easily.
I mean, Putin's like met with Vitalik. I always think that's like interesting.
It is interesting.
I think I don't know how much control there is or direct input.
I mean, I but like, I find so that this very whole thing about the central bank
Ethereum for freedom, you know, freedom of computer for the world goes. He meets with Putin, he meets with South Korea. It's, I mean, I guess it's good to talk to your enemies and maybe try to bring freedom. But I don't know if I want to bring freedom to North Koreans. I'm not going to meet with their leader.
He probably brought them a fuzzy unicorn in playtime.
I don't know. What do you think of this? I guess Russia seems primed with all their
new Russia's central bank power. Is going to permit this, but it's going to be under massive control for the amount of rehypothecation these banks are allowed to do with their Bitcoin, right? So it sounds a lot like U.S. regulation in that, yeah, we're going to let you handle crypto, but you're going to have one-to-one reserves, and it just breaks the bank model. And therefore, the banks are going to be slow to take it up.
Sure. Do you think it's going to bring any freedom to 20 million? I mean, I don't know if I believe this number that 20 million Russians are already using. I mean, is that crypto? I don't know.
We have Russians that work Russians that work for us, and you know, they're not worried about their freedom. It's not like they like, you know what I mean? Like, right. I don't know.
All right, let's move on to the next one.
I don't know if Russia is what the Russia that we grew up with. Big banks plan G7 stablecoin. 10 banking giants, B of A, Deutsche Bank, Goldman, etc., explore a G7 peg stablecoin. Threat or catalyst to Bitcoin?
Yeah, it's not a threat. Definitely a catalyst. Yeah, like everyone's running to the table now. These are some of the laggard banks. Goldman's weird to be in there because they have Circle.
Yeah.
So like, are they just kind of like betting on different horses? Yeah, sure. The G7 thing mix, maybe that's sort of like to do monetary colonialism, like kind of be a little bit like friendly with these other six countries.
Like, why do I want a stable coin that's got Deutsche Bank attached to it?
No, but it can't. Well, people want stable coins and look, they might not even be getting stable coins, but they're going to be offered products. What I'm getting at
is it's going to have exposure to the whole G7. This is where
Facebook failed.
Debt? All the G7 debt? Like, I don't want the G7 debt.
Well, yeah, but they're hoping some customers aren't as smart as you, and you know. Well,
I mean, I think people are pretty like, if you're living in a G7 country and the dollar is the better currency, you want the dollar stablecoin. You don't want the G7 stablecoin.
Look, Goldman launched a stablecoin. They're number two now. It's not like these guys are idiots and can't, you know, figure out markets. And well, maybe this failed. But the point is,
they didn't launch it.
Right, but these are laggard banks. They're coming late. Everyone wants to get in the game.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting that they're going to try maybe the basket of currencies approach. Facebook failed at that. A lot of governments negotiate with it. Seems
nobody wants that shit.
Right. No one wants that shit. And then it would just creep towards the dollar. And then probably even maybe things that are not fiat on that. Maybe that's their angle. Maybe they're going to put Bitcoin in there, you know, or something not those seven currencies and be a bigger basket. But
yeah, we'll see.
Everyone's coming to the table.
I don't have faith.
All right. So there was a mystery whale behind the $4.2 billion Bitcoin dump. Oh, it was unmasked.
he's
the Hyperliquid guy. Oh, please. This is like the kid on the roof. What is this? What do you believe this?
I don't know, dude.
The way investigators claim Hyperliquid Whale, who dumped $4.23 billion in Bitcoin for ETH, also
this
shorted.
This is another one of those weird ones, right? Where like there's all these arrows pointing that he was involved as a fraud at Bit4x, and you know that he was involved in these other companies where Bitcoin disappeared, and now he's but there's all this suspicion around him, but he's never been arrested, he's never been detained. Just seems to be floating through life without any issues and supposedly, right, trading billions and billions of dollars.
So this is the person who like wasn't it a person who shorted Bitcoin like right like 30 minutes? This is supposedly that person.
And he says, no, that was a friend's account. That wasn't my account. Or a customer's account. That wasn't my account.
Oh, he's already like, that wasn't me. He's also saying it wasn't him.
But what I'm saying is like, people that we know have done far less and been detained, right? This guy just, you know, swinging $1 billion around and, you know, being involved in corporations that have all sorts of fraud issues and things going on. And it's all good. It's all good. Yeah, that's just a client's account. Don't worry about it, bro.
I don't know.
I don't trust any of it.
Strange times.
I don't trust any of it, man.
No, I don't. I think we don't have the real story here.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, let's move on.
I was a big believer in Bitcoins since more or less the start of it. I got to buy my first few thousand of Bitcoin in 2013, and I didn't care much. I think I bought at the local maximum. It's something like $700 per Bitcoin. And I just threw a couple of millions there. And a lot of people after Bitcoin later next year went down, somewhere close to 300, 200, started to express their sympathy to me. They say, oh, you poor fellow, you made this horrible mistake investing in this new thing, but don't feel bad about it. We still have some respect for you. And my response to them was, I don't care. I'm not going to sell it. I believe in this thing. I think this is the way money should work. Nobody can confiscate your Bitcoin from you. Nobody can censor you for political reasons. This is the ultimate means of exchange. And again, I'm now talking about Bitcoin, but it relates to cryptocurrencies in general. So I have been able to fund my lifestyle, so to say, from my Bitcoin investment. Some people think if I'm able to rent nice locations or fly private, it's because I somehow extract money from Telegram. But like I said, Telegram is a money-losing operation for me personally. Bitcoin is something that allowed me to stay afloat. And I believe it will come to a point when Bitcoin is worth $1 million. Just look at the trends. The governments keep printing money like no tomorrow. Nobody's printing Bitcoin. There is a predictable inflation and then it stops. It's a certain point. Bitcoin is here to stay. All the fiat currencies remains to be seen.
Dude, I've got so many questions. So he's saying Telegram's losing money. Bitcoin's funding his lifestyle. Is this proving that true freedom in the future will depend more on code than on citizenship?
Yeah. I mean,
I'm so confused. This is the guy that launched a Bitcoin wallet with no Bitcoin.
Telegram founder?
Yes, Telegram's Bitcoin wallet doesn't handle Bitcoin. It only handles shitcoins.
Okay, but he's also the guy who said that, you know, the U.S. government has a law that allows them to go to any developer at any company, tech company, and say, yeah, you have to give us a back. Sure. You have to do what we want, and you can't tell your boss. And that's why he won't move to the States.
Mm-hmm.
That sounded like a Satoshi-like figure. Not that I'm saying he invented Bitcoin.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But like, almost in a way, like, so you would imagine Satoshi's like, look, like I worked at Cisco. And in my spare time, I created Bitcoin. I haven't made any money from Bitcoin.
Maybe that's why
I haven't spent any of my Bitcoin. I lost money making this thing. But thank God for my Oracle stock options that allowed me to do this thing.
Do you think that maybe he didn't put Bitcoin? Maybe he really does love Bitcoin and he didn't put it in his wallet because he knew he had to put a backdoor in his wallet. And he didn't want to fuck Bitcoiners.
Sure. If it's a sure.
I mean, I'm just
maybe
saying,
he couldn't figure out a way to do it the way that would work.
Either you're feeding us a line of shit now because you don't really like Bitcoin, but...
Well, he could be just someone who did really... His story is very interesting. He put a few million into Bitcoin.
If you love Bitcoin, why is it not like the primary asset or the only asset in your Telegram
That's
wallet?
That's a really fair question.
It's not even there.
They have a crypto wallet. But...
Yes, they launched a crypto. Dude, this is in our intro. I'm saying, give me a break about Telegram.
Right, but
they launched.
I don't use it.
So the media is like, they launched a Bitcoin wallet, and then I went in and checked it out, and like, there was no Bitcoin.
What I don't understand every time I talk to it recently, you know, especially people on X or Bitcoiners, they're like, "Yo, you got a Telegram? Yo, you got a Signal?" And I'm why can't we talk? What are we going to talk about? That, like, I'm always like, why we need to go to this encrypted platform,
right?
And we never end up talking about anything that I would be like, why did we leave where we were already communicating and go to this other one for what benefit?
I don't know.
But so I think this is really interesting. I thought that was an amazing quip. Lex seemed pissed. Lex was like, oh, you like this Bitcoin thing a little too much. You didn't sell any. You're still holding. Like, he was like this. He seems a little like, wrap it up, you know? And I don't know, man. Like, that was inspiring to me, but it's disappointing to hear the Bitcoin, the wallet.
It's so hard for me. Know. Like, when I don't see these things aligning, and it could just,
if there was ever anyone who would understand sort of networks and censorship resistance and all that, it'd be someone who's creating like a Napster or
Telegram. Whole point of Telegram was privacy and security. And you see those same kind of qualities in Bitcoin, and you maybe call it the best money in the world. Why would you not have Bitcoin in your Telegram wallet?
I don't know. Don't fall for all now the Bitcoin influencers.
Now I want to know. Did he add it to the wallet? Maybe he added it to the wallet.
We'll see. I don't know. Let's move on.
It's driving me crazy.
All right. Coinbase and MasterCard's $2 billion stablecoin race. Are Coinbase and MasterCard's bidding wars trying to acquire stablecoin firm for $2 billion, a sign that traditional finance will pay almost anything to control crypto's payment plumbing?
Well, dude, MasterCard has a lot to lose, man. They have so does Visa. Because if the world starts trading stablecoins peer-to-peer, they're smoked. And I would think that they need to move
into this. I don't think any of this is going to be peer-to-peer. I don't think the majority of stablecoins are going to be peer-to-peer.
What I'm getting at is a settlement, right?
Yeah.
Like, they need instant settlement so badly. Like, the cost of settlement risk in their business, but like,
why would they need to acquire, like, you copy paste the fucking tech?
That's a good point.
Like, what do you, like, whatever you buy is gonna be like old tech by the time you figure out how to use it.
This banks or BVNK, whatever they're called, they have a token issuance protocol system and the rails, etc. So, you know, if you're going to be running credit card transactions with stable coins, you're going to be issuing credit and running your transactions with stable coins, so you have instant settlement. You're going to have to do that in like every currency in the world if you're MasterCard. So they probably are highly incentivized to be like, we need to be able to like create stable coins for every currency we deal in. And right now everybody's doing USDT. So maybe that's the way they're thinking about it. And then if you're Coinbase, I mean, this is like partially shutting down some competition if you really want to push Circle or diversify into issuing stable coins in all the other countries. So, I mean,
opening up markets.
They're both are highly incentivized to get this thing. It'd be interesting to see.
I think they do want to own these rails.
Yeah,
these rails are going to be very valuable.
Very valuable.
I just think it's going to be, you know, you bought Yahoo, you bought certain companies that just
died.
The tech wasn't there, find out Yahoo.
I mean, this is pretty simple tech. That's
what I'm saying, right?
Like, they're not, and they're tech, not
you would want to know, like, you just build your own database. Like,
yeah.
You know, I don't know. All right. Let's move on.
Binance's $283 million crash payout. Binance is compensating users $283 million after several wrapped assets, wrapped Beth, whatever that is, BN Soul and USDE depegged in the flash crash. Does this set a new precedent for exchange responsibility, or is it fostering more hazard for risky traders?
Oh, it's definitely not establishing like a accountability. A lot of this is coming out of Binance, however people say it, their Binance Earn program.
Oh.
Right. And this was tied to like
people were staking coin. This stuff to get income. And then,
but I think also sort of like as collateral. Oh. So, and it depegged by like 35%. And then there's this whole sort of like war of like the chain of like, well, our depeg was 15 minutes after the Bitcoin flash crash. We didn't cause it. Because some people are saying this has nothing to do with Trump, the flash crash, that it had to do more with this depegging and the illiquidity in certain stable coins. And they're saying, no, that wasn't us, but we're going to cover these. I guess I think they want to protect their proprietary programs.
Good.
This is not, and they were like, this is not the way things are going to necessarily be going forward if you lose your money here. I don't think they're establishing accountability. I think this is moral hazard, or more of it. But it just shows
it's a bailout for their customers, right?
Yeah, it's a bailout for their customers on what are probably very profitable.
It's probably smart on Binance's. I mean, if I was Binance and I could afford to do that, I'd probably do the same thing.
Yeah.
I want to make my customers whole. But at the same time, I don't think people realize how unstable how thin some of these markets are in these.
But if you were collateralized and if the peg didn't break, you would have been still enough collateralization. And now the peg breaks and it doesn't perform the function it was, and you get wiped out of what could have been a still profitable position.
Yeah. But because
you're
linked to the most illiquid assets.
So they had coins that were trading like 350, right? Then the flash crash happens, and some people had old limit orders of like one penny
that never got closed out.
Or that never got closed out. You would think they would wipe those clean after a certain period of time.
Wow.
And that sort of triggered some of these low buys and all these different things, right?
Interesting.
So, yeah.
Interesting.
So it points to a lot of problems in the system, and that this stuff is just going to keep happening. So
good to cancel it. Binance is for real.
Get out of Binance. They're the world's largest cryptocurrencies. So I can't believe that. CZ is still on top of that surfboard.
Largest exchange.
Largest exchange. But they do run stable coins, so some of their own.
Mm-hmm.
And CZ, man, still out of jail, still running that thing. Wow. All right. The casino. So crypto payments enter U.S. casino industry.
That's us.
Yeah. So Bite Federal struck a deal. You guys, us, go bank yourself with BurraPay. Is that a way?
BurraPay. Yeah. Yeah.
And this will let licensed gaming operators settle bets in Bitcoin and fiat. Could regulated gambling become an unexpected on-ramp for mainstream Bitcoin adoption?
I don't know if it's for adoption, but I mean, what BurraPay is doing is really interesting. They have become the only licensed, regulated crypto wallet by the gaming industry. So all the gaming regulators have given them the thumbs up, and they've given them permission to be the first crypto wallet to interface with legal operators in the gaming space. So BurraPay facilitates the casinos receiving Bitcoin from the gamblers. In exchange, Bite Federal will take that Bitcoin, deliver dollars to the casino to fund the gambler's wallet. So the gambling is still taking place with dollars, and we're facilitating the exchange, and BurraPay is the licensed regulated wallet for the entire industry.
Gamble with Bitcoin, but then get sort of tokenized.
The way this works is the gambler funds their Bitcoin. I mean, funds their gaming or their gambling with Bitcoin.
Right.
But they are getting dollar credits.
They're out
in
their
casino.
Own Bitcoin.
Yeah.
They are using Bitcoin. Like, in a way.
100%. 100%.
Right? They're using their Bitcoin. Right. And then they're getting, it doesn't matter if they get diamonds on the other side that are tokenized diamonds worth $1.
Right.
Because a lot of people.
Dollar value that are credits to use in the casino.
This is a use case, though. It's like even hardcore Bitcoiners use the dollar as a unit of account when gambling, probably.
Yeah,
unless they're gambling on the side with other Bitcoiners, something like that.
Yeah,
but like
100%.
When you go to a casino, most people are like, I want to make a $20 bet, I want to make a $5 bet, you know, and you're using it as a medium of exchange, and you're using it as a unit account. I think maybe using it as a unit account before you go into the casino. Maybe you're like, hey, I'm only going to give up X amount of dollars today because I value my money more than that, and I cannot buy it that many less sats tomorrow. But once you're in there, you're like, all right, I got this $100. This game is a dollar. That game's $5.
The interesting thing is like the offshore unregulated gaming with crypto is like a giant market. And the casinos here in the United States have missed out on that because there was no regulated solution provider. They come from the gaming space. The founders do. The founders were like some of the largest slot machine operations in the world, like as far as like the software for the slot machines. And so they've been in the game industry for a long time.
And at some point they roll out
crypto and built this.
What do you mean they got into it as a company or
they started this new company to be able to develop a wallet. It's a brand new company that they founded in order to build out this proprietary wallet for gaming operators.
So they built a proprietary wallet.
The gaming regulators have approved, right? Because that's the only way you're getting in the door.
Now, the gaming regulators, is that state by state or is that national?
I believe it's state by state, so, and then even goes into,
so I wonder, you know, if they're in like all 50 states.
Indian lands, it goes into online, it goes into all different avenues within the United States.
Right. And so at some point, if you have your JP Morgan stablecoin, you know, or your Circle coin, whatever, you can go, or your Bitcoin, you can go to a casino in the future. And
yeah.
So, but this is online, but so eventually this, it'll be physical.
Imagine
too, probably,
you go to Caesar's Palace and you want to gamble. So you want to fund your casino wallet. And you could pay with your credit card, you could pay with your PayPal, you could pay with Venmo, you could pay with Bitcoin.
So if it's Bitcoin, could that be in my Strike wallet or my wallet,
Satoshi wallet? Yeah, any wallet, doesn't matter. You're sending it to the BurraPay wallet that the casino is operating.
So, okay. So you don't see BurraPay, you log into Caesars, and Caesars like, here's your wallet that you could send your Bitcoin to this wallet, which would be the BurraPay wallet.
They're operating it for the casino.
Then BurraPay's... So, and I'm not saying transferring like there's a sale or whatever, but however, I'm just layman terms. And BurraPay works with Bifederal.
Mm-hmm. Bifederal, they say, hey, Caesar's got X amount of Bitcoin. Give us a quote. We give them a quote. We exchange it. We take the Bitcoin. We deliver them dollars.
And then how does this work in practice? Now that you guys, it's all set to go, how does it get implemented? Do you have to go to casino? Caesars,
they're signing up operators because they're the licensed gaming wallet. We are exchanging the currency.
Got it. That's fascinating.
Yeah, it's a really, what they built is really cool, really exciting. We're fired up to be a part of it.
And then
do
you think, so that's online though. Was this only online?
No, the first inked client is an online provider, but they're in talks with all the major casino operators in the United States.
Fascinating. All right. Very cool.
Yeah.
Well, hit like and subscribe if you're enjoying the show towards the end. Francis, I don't know if we have any Q&A or comments.
We don't.
Well, there you have it.
So exciting.
The best in the game. All right. So
we just answer everybody's question.
I hope you guys enjoy the news we're bringing to you. This is Bitcoin Center, brought to you by Bifederal. Go bank yourself. Point of sale, crypto wallet, and Bitcoin ATMs. Get that Bitcoin. Put it in self-custody. Run your own node. Stamp your seed phrase. Use microseed. Use code matrix at microseed.io. All right. I think we
don't get pig butchered.
Oh.
Don't do that shit.
Yeah, don't get your Bitcoin taken by the U.S. government.
Just ignore the 15 emails and text messages you're getting every day from Coinbase withdrawals.
Yeah, there's no free lunch.
It's not happening.